thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here's one.
Here's John Williams.
I hope you're dry. It was an exceptional weekend, wasn't it? But in fact, if there was just one thing that stood out, it wasn't the Bears winning or the Cubs losing or I don't know what you saw on TV, but the rain on Saturday was historic. And if you had a wedding on Saturday, I am so sorry for you and your family and your money and your caterer and your dress and your flowers. Holy cow. I have a son who's getting married to a lovely young lady in November, and we're kind of watching the weather. I can literally, for a date a month in advance, type in the forecast and see what it's going to be like, not knowing that it's knowing full well it's not going to be that accurate, but Lord, that's on our mind. And so I just kind of got weddings on my brain. And for the people who, I mean, look at today. Today, right now, would be the most glorious time in human history to get married. It's a beautiful blue day with a crisp sky. But for 2 days on Saturday, it was the rainiest day in the history of Chicago. Am I right about that? Didn't somebody say that over the weekend that at least in some parts of the area in the South and West, never before in Chicago history have we gotten as much rain as we did in those 24 hours? It did not stop on Saturday. It kept raining. And the only variation you had in the theme was that sometimes it would rain a little harder still. And you say, well, it's going to let up now. And it would let up to a good rain and then just start raining harder again. Wow. Now, I'm one of these people that's paranoid about water leaking in roofs and water leaking in basements. I'm paranoid about that.
And I was pumping out my backyard all day yesterday.
I'm so sorry.
Well, you know, it just was a backyard. It wasn't in the
basement?
Yeah.
Didn't go into your house all that rain?
No.
Oh, man, that's good.
I just like to don't like to see it in my yard.
Yeah, well.
Sweet, our rain gauge, we have a rain gauge, it was stops at 5 inches, and then there's a lip, and it was full.
Well, didn't some people get 8?
I heard 7 or, yeah, I don't know.
8 inches of rain. I mean, this is Hurricane Harvey stuff. It's not that. But really, when's the last time 2 inches gets our attention around here? 2 inches is a huge rain. Some of you had 8 over the weekend. So sorry about that. You get through Saturday. You know, there's not much you can do with a day like that. Hoping for Sunday. Sunday was marginally better. In fact, Sunday was better, but it wasn't a great day. But you had the Bears game. If I said to you over the weekend, if I said to you, say, on Friday, what do you think is more likely this weekend? The Cubs will win one game or the Bears will win one game. Which would you pick? The Bears will win one game or the Cubs will win one game over the weekend?
Cubs.
You would have picked the Cubs. The Bears actually had, I'll tell you what, that last pass that Trubisky threw was, I went, oh my God, we've got one of those. We got a guy that can stand there on his back foot, throw the ball, it'll be a strike right in. I didn't know we had one of those. Woohoo! We have one of those, I think. At least we did on that play. Sam Panionovich is going to talk sports with us at 1:30. Just a little bit more about these things. But the Cubs were depressing. And, you know, you just sit down on a sofa, you know, it's just like, I'm going to sit here and why don't you hit me with a bat for about 3 hours, 4 hours. You knew that's what it was going to be like, and that's what it was like. And that was game two. Game one was like that, too. They're not enjoyable. You'd think that if you're on the precipice of the World Series, it's supposed to be fun. Cubs fans should be having more fun right now than, say, Twins fans or Sox fans or Reds fans. That's the, I think, I envied Cincinnati Reds fans last night.
Because they were?
Disaffected.
Can I tell you, I'm relieved that there's not a game tonight.
Yeah.
I've got other things to do.
I know. There was Sunday Night Football last night, too. I didn't watch it, but Al Michaels was on. I'm just going to play his joke and then his apology, just to make a simple point about it. This is Al Michaels Sunday night.
I mean, let's face it, the Giants are coming off a worse week than Harvey Weinstein, and they're up by 14 points.
Only my L.A. guy comes up with that one.
Later in the broadcast, Al Michaels, and you know what happens. They throw that out there. They've got people monitoring social media, or they've got a brain and two ears, and they go, you shouldn't have said that. You're blowing up. You're trending. You got to fix it now. So he says this.
The reference earlier before, tried to be a little flip about somebody obviously very much in the news all over the country and was not meant in that manner. So my apologies. And we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I think that's all you can do right there, because you can't go back. You can't fix it. And you've already revealed yourself to not appreciate the magnitude of the situation. I'm not here to beat up on Al Michaels. I don't know him. And I say stupid stuff all the time. I've said stupid stuff as far as a lot of you are concerned about this story myself. But I think Sunday night I knew on a national football telecast not to use Harvey Weinstein as a metaphor for somebody who's had a bad week. Wow. So that's a pretty tin ear about that situation.
Have there been no jokes about Harvey Weinstein in late-night TV shows?
Well, Saturday Night Live famously missed the chance the first Saturday night, but they went after him this Saturday night, and that seemed corrective to me. Saturday Night Live had a bunch of jokes about how ugly he is and how terrible he is, and it seemed more punitive than anything else. What are you going to do with Harvey Weinstein? You can't fix that. You've got to comment on it. And so all you said was he's ugly and he's a horrible person. And people kind of laugh because they wanted to just punch back at this guy. And so Saturday Night Live gave you that. But I think they were shooting blanks. You know, it didn't feel all that funny or insightful to me, except we hate this behavior. We now hate him. Guess what? He looks like chewing gum with cat hair. that's pretty much, from my estimation, what they had.
I didn't find that line funny either.
I don't know, you know, and I think since they didn't seize the moment the first Saturday, they knew they had to do something this time, and they really didn't have much to say about it. You know, something really good to say about it. I mean, just, you know, sort of trying to have a positive social impact was Alyssa Milano. Over the weekend, she said, suggested by a friend, if all the women who have been sexually harassed or assaulted wrote Me Too as a status, we might give people a sense of the magnitude of the problem, something that Al Michaels could have used before he went on TV Sunday night. So the hashtag Me Too was trending over the weekend. And I looked at her page before we came into the studio. She has 41,000 comments and 30,000 likes and 15,000 retweets, big, you know, President Trump-sized numbers on this issue. And some of the people who are saying Me Too include Deborah Messing and Anna Paquin and Javier Munoz, who said, I don't know if it means anything coming from a gay man, but it's happened to me multiple times, sexual harassment or sexual assault. And so suddenly Me Too means something. Do you have the CNN montage? This is fascinating. CNN took all of the interviews they've done, or many of them, and there must be like five or six different ladies here. And so I don't recognize any of them, I don't think, but they all look like women who are actresses or models, and they are all talking about their Harvey Weinstein experience. And the montage goes like 5 minutes. What's interesting is that they all have had pretty much the same experience. This guy has an MO, right? You know, you invite them up, and then you go to the bathroom or take a shower, and then you come out on a bathrobe. The language is the same. The actions are the same. I don't have time for 5 minutes of it, but here's just a brief synopsis of what CNN posted about Weinstein over the weekend.
He wanted to fly me to New York and give me a role in Sarah Jessica Parker's new film. He alternated between that and asking me to give him a naked massage in the bed. He went to the bathroom, came back out of the bathroom in a robe, and asked me to give him a massage. And then he excused himself to go to the bathroom. And when he came back, he was just in a robe and, as I mentioned, buck naked. He opened the door to the room in an open robe. I went to reach for my purse and I told him this is ridiculous and, you know, I'm leaving, and he grabbed my arm. On the table, he had a bunch of papers and he said, listen, these are contracts for my next three films. I will sign them right now, but I want you to have a threesome with me and my assistant. I said I wanted to go. He left the room again, and this time he came back fully naked and he was blocking the door. I'm 5'1", he's 6'2", he's much, much larger than me. He was blocking the only exit out. As he followed me, he told me he would give me a 3-picture deal and he could get my movie made, but you gotta stay and watch me masturbate. I thought he was kidding, and he got angry at that point. He said, this is how this business works.
you will never make it in this industry.
I finally just broke away. I felt like it's better to run.
Once I saw that he had finished whatever he needed to do, I said, is that it? Can I go now? And I ran.
He says he'll let me past him if he gets dressed and takes me to a taxi himself, where he did. He took me to a taxi. And then he got in the cab with me. I got off at a bar downtown in the West Village, and he sat there and watched me through the window of the taxi while I was in the bar for a good 20 minutes.
Pretty amazing, huh? That's on CNN. Five or six different women all telling a story that sounds very, very similar, one to the next. The declarations also took over Facebook with the hashtag MeToo, and reportedly, French women did something similar by tweeting their experiences of being sexually harassed at work using the hashtag #BalanceTonPork, or poor, I believe. I'm not exactly sure what this is. It translates to squeal on your pig. Alyssa Milano co-starred with Rose McGowan on the show Charmed. McGowan has also alleged that Weinstein raped her. So Me Too, if you see on Facebook or Twitter, is people who say somehow or another they've been harassed or worse as well, and that is trending online. The president, to my knowledge, has not commented on it. His most recent tweet is this. He tweeted this about 4 hours ago. I was recently asked if crooked Hillary Clinton is going to run in 2020. My answer was, I hope so! Exclamation point. That from President Trump. He was asked about the story when he was going to or from somewhere, and he said he knows Harvey Weinstein and this doesn't surprise him. They said, does this mimic in any way your behavior? And he said, no, what I did and said was just locker room talk. So that's where that subject is today. But at least on the bright side, the Saturday Night Live skit or opening monologue by, I call him Dinesh from Silicon Valley because that's the way I know him, Kumail Nanjiani, was really funny. Did you watch Saturday Night Live at all? Saturday night, Steve, or Sunday or Monday?
I watched the first few minutes of it, yes.
Did you see his monologue?
I did see some of it.
I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah?
I loved it.
And that's all. What's the matter, Steve? Why didn't you like his
monologue?
I'm
trying to remember, because I was thinking of it, and like specifically, I don't remember too much.
Well, he was talking about Islamophobia and how I was having a second. He said it's back like Will and Grace. You knew it was there, but boy, you didn't know it was going to come back this strong. And then he just had a couple of, I thought, insightful and funny things to say about it. He's good. He's good. I'll let you hear a little of that in a minute. The Lake County Republicans on Friday went through with their dinner and raffle. The raffle was for guns, and it included the, A-15 semi-automatic rifle that was used in the Las Vegas shooting. Not the exact one, obviously, but one like that. So you could have bought the very same gun that the killer used in Las Vegas. Actually, it was a raffle. You would have paid a fair price for the ticket, but if you got lucky, you would get the very same weapon that man used to kill almost 60 people and injure almost 600. How about that? They said, well, we don't want to give the gun back to the person that donated it because that would be inconsiderate and not nice. And I don't know if I was more shocked by that or by that, but that's what happened over the weekend. So I posted the story and a picture of the poster that went with the raffle and dinner over the weekend. And I said, we'll share from your comments on our show on Monday. Today is Monday, and we will get to that a little after two. It is exceptional. Okay, so let's go back to Saturday Night Live, the opening monologue by Kumail Nanjiani. Was about, he had a movie that came out recently. It was a pretty good movie, and he ended up talking about Islamophobia.
The movie was well received, mostly. I read a guy said, I watched the whole movie, I just don't like race mixing. Yeah. First of all, nobody good ever uses the phrase race mixing. Even if someone was like, I'm pro-race mixing, I'd be like, why are you talking like that? Are you an undercover KKK dragon? A lot of people were like, go back to India, which I've never been to India. Are you just hoping I have an awesome vacation soon? Here's my fantasy. This is my fantasy. My fantasy is when someone's racist to me, I want danger to befall them immediately. And then I want to rescue them just to see the confused look on their face. Like, I want them to be like, go back to India, haha, wolves! And then I fight off all the wolves. And they're like, we were racist to you and you still saved us. And I go, that is the way of my people. Islamophobia is really on the rise right now. You know, it never really went away, but it's really having a moment right now. Islamophobia is kind of like Will and Grace, you know, where... It was huge a while ago, and then we thought it was gone and done, and now it's back and bigger than ever. Which brings me to my problem with most racism. Here's my problem with most racism. It's the inaccuracy. That's what bugs me. I'm like, do the research. Put in the work. You will see the benefits. I'll give you an example. If someone yells at me, go back to India, I'd be like, that guy's an idiot. But if someone was like, go back to Pakistan, which was part of India until 1947 and is now home to the world's oldest salt mine, I would be like, that guy seems to know what he's talking about.
Kumail Nanjiani. I remember him. Do you like him as Dinesh in Silicon Valley? His movie was Big Sick, where he is a Pakistani. It's biographical. Marries a white woman. It's a pretty good movie, and I thought he was pretty good the other night. It's 1:28. Sam Panionovich has a few things to talk to you and me about, like, what are the Cubs going to do next? By the way, Steve, this is John Williams. I'll answer the question myself. If Yasiel Puig was on the Cubs, would we like him? Of course we would, because then he would be, you know, whatever knucklehead he is, licking his bat, just saying.
It'd be endearing?
Well, but isn't the perfect example of that Dennis Rodman? There was no reason to like Dennis Rodman in a way. I mean, you could like him because he was... He knew his role, he cherished his role, and he really delivered. You know, Rodman was a good rebounder. He was a good, was he a good defender? You know, whatever he was supposed to do, he knew where he fit in Michael Jordan's team. And that was a beautiful thing. He didn't want to score. He wasn't overly ambitious that way. He said, I'm going to be this guy. But he was obnoxious as hell. And he was he just didn't.
Pick one.
The hair, the time where he kicked the photographer in the crotch, all of that.
Oh, yeah, I loved it. Ate it up.
I was at that game, actually. I didn't go to many NBA games back then. I actually saw that game. And when that happened, I thought, there's no way. Anyway, Puig, we would probably like if he were a Cub. But that still means that everybody else in America, rooting for all the other teams, gets to not like that guy.
Yeah, I think he's worn a little thin at times in Los Angeles, hasn't he?
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
hey, Sam Panionovich, join us. You're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good. Let me raise you one more. I used to hate A.J. Pierzynski when he was a Minnesota Twin.
Totally, totally.
He gets to the White Sox, he becomes a world champion, the city falls in love with him. So I'd put Puig in that same category. It's Puig, Pierzynski, Dennis Rodman, they're all right there.
Boy, I don't think, I don't know that Pierzynski deserves that. Was he that obnoxious? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Well, other teams, I mean, Michael Barrett punched him in the face in that Cubs-Sox game. He didn't do, like, bombastic, outlandish things, but he talked a lot of smack and he got under your skin. I guess in the grand scheme, he's not, like, a guy that does a lot of, you know, eccentric things. He was just kind of like a gritty grinder player that really, you know, talked a lot of smack.
Well, here's just a few tips for you. If say you're a Major League Baseball player. You really shouldn't come out for a curtain call. But if you do, it really has to be something extraordinary. And they have to be asking for it. You don't get to be the decider of what's extraordinary. Also, walk-off singles and doubles are kind of a thing I don't like, Sam. You know, where you hit it, and then you admire it, and you go into your home run trot, and it bounces off the wall. He's had one of those in the playoffs, too. Now, granted, he's had more of those than we've had hits, so I'll give him his due, but that grates on us, I guess, when we're playing badly. What's the matter with the Cubs, Sam?
Well, a couple different things. I mean, when you have 3 runs in 2 games, 2 runs in game 1, 1 run in game 2, that won't cut it. 7 hits in 2 games, and the strikeout numbers are just astonishing. The Cubs struck out 9 times in game 1, 12 times in game 2. That's 21 strikeouts in 2 games. I don't care what Joe Maddon does in the bullpen. Now, the decisions are a little more amplified, like putting in John Lackey last night. I wouldn't have done that. He's never pitched out of the bullpen. He's never pitched back-to-back days. But when you make mistakes like that, with no offense, everything gets more magnified. And I think it's the lack of contact, the lack of runs, and the Dodgers' bullpen is just the best in the game. And they haven't given up a run yet in two games.
Yeah, our pitching hasn't been bad. I mean, I know we lose our minds over the decisions Joe Maddon makes, but if we were putting up our usual four or five, we'd be okay, wouldn't we?
Quintana went five in game one. He was pretty decent, you know, gave up two hits, two runs. But when you have to go four innings out of the bullpen with this bullpen, I mean, this bullpen is not as strong as it was last year for the Cubs. You don't have the depth that you've had. You've had some control issues, and you've got guys that come in and they just can't throw strikes. I mean, two walks in game one. In game two, the bullpen had four walks. When you give free passes up, it's going to come back and burn you. And like I said, when you don't score any runs, when you only score one run, you're not going to win most playoff games.
What's the matter with Chris Bryant, man?
Get him a tennis racket, right? I mean, he struck out, I think, like 15 times now in the playoffs. He had 10 strikeouts in the first series. Struck out, I think, you know, three times in the first couple of games. I think it's more mental than it is physical. When you fall into a slump at the wrong time, you just start to overthink your at-bats. Now, the Dodgers have swing and a miss stuff. They've got a really good rotation and a really good bullpen. But, I mean, he's not even putting the ball in play, and he's not even really close at the plate. He did have a hit last night. I think he had a hit in game one. But, I mean, you talk about the slugging and the doubles, triples, home runs, and RBIs. I mean, he's pretty much throwing up a goose egg right now. It's ugly to watch him hit.
He just missed with that first at-bat. I thought he was going to come around where he put it on the track. You know the one? Was that his first at-bat last night? It's to center. He got all of that. It just didn't get enough of that, I guess. I guess he didn't get all of that, but boy, he hit it pretty hard. Do you have anything to say about the officiating and some of these close calls, the play at the plate, the blocking of the plate, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I didn't like the call in game one when Contreras had the plate blocked with his foot, and then the Dodgers player came sliding across, and he couldn't touch the plate. It was a great block, but that's part of the rule book now. That's the Buster Posey rule, because Buster Posey got ran over at the plate. He's a catcher for the Giants, and it pretty much ruined his season, and the Giants down spiraled after that. It's about protecting your players and protecting the catcher. So they said the rule was that the runner didn't have enough room to, you know, touch the plate, couldn't touch the plate. It makes sense. It's in the rule book. Doesn't mean I have to like it.
So
beautiful tag.
It was a beautiful – everything was good about that, and I agreed with the announcers. It's a shame that the rules are taking the athleticism, but Schwarber, everybody in that play – performed exceptionally, and then it's all for naught because of an interpretation of some rule. And I think that the ball was just enough left of the line. The momentum of the ball would take you, you know, to the left. And so you put your left foot out there to sort of anticipate that, to get in front of the throw. I mean, what's the catcher supposed to do? Not make a full effort to catch the ball? He's got to catch the ball, and it didn't seem to me to be egregious. He put his foot out there. He's in more peril than the runner. He could have broken his leg. The runner had a shot at home plate.
Yeah, but it was clearly against the rule.
You think so?
Well, Sam, that was the rule, right? That you can't do that.
Yeah, that's the rule. Yeah, that's the rule. Now, the issue is they've just changed that rule in the last couple of years. So as a catcher, Wilson Contreras, you're trained to do something for 20, 21, 22 years to block the plate and to take the back corner away from the runner, and he's done what he's done his entire life. Now, because of a rule book change, you kind of have to, like, in the moment, John, in the heat of the moment, you have to, like, go against everything you've been trained and then go against the fact that you're trying to block the plate and try and remember some stupid rule.
And not make a complete effort to do what you're there for. You got to catch the ball before you tag him out.
I have to follow the rule. Let me untag the plate. You know, it's like you don't think about that in the heat of the moment.
If he's got to snag it with his left hand and then bring it back in instead of get his body in front of that throw, I think it's taking the play away from the catcher. I'll fix this in the off season. I'm not exactly sure how, but I'll see if I can't manage it. Are we done talking? What else do we need to say about the Cubs? Are we done talking about the Cubs here, Sam?
Well, I mean, you've got game three tomorrow. I don't know if you're going to make the whole game. It starts at 8 o'clock Chicago time. 8 o'clock Chicago time. Game three. Kyle Hendricks is pretty much your savior right now. He's been your best pitcher in the playoffs. It'll be Hendricks for the Cubs, Yu Darvish for Los Angeles, Cubs have to win. Can't go down 3-0 because I doubt you beat this team four games in a row. So it's about as close to do or die as it gets, and that'll be game three. Like I said, that'll be tomorrow night. A weird start time, though. 8 o'clock local time tomorrow night at Wrigley.
So at the pace they've been playing, 8 o'clock, they'll be like 10 o'clock when I go to bed. That'll be the second.
Yeah,
the
really.
Game might end at 12:15 in the morning.
This is my problem. You know, Steve was talking with Bill and Wendy earlier about all of the ticks and the sort of habits that batters have when they're in the batter's box. What got you guys onto that? It was when Puig licked his bat, right, Steve?
Right, yeah.
Does he do that all the time? I saw him do it once. I didn't know that was a thing. But you remember when Chuck Knobloch would, after every pitch, step out of the box and loosen his batting gloves and then retighten them again? And it must have taken 20, 30 seconds every single time.
It took away his ability to throw to first base from second.
He had issues about that. But it also took away the ability of the pitcher to stay in a groove. I want them to do something that makes the game move more quickly. I don't know what that is, but these shenanigans that the pitchers and catchers are up to these days, I don't think serves the defenders or the hitters.
Okay, Sam, you know more about this, but so last night's game was long. It wasn't extraordinarily long, right? It was like 3.5 hours, maybe, something like that.
It was moving quickly for a while.
Yeah, but so,
3 hours 20 minutes.
Okay, and for game one was about 16 hours. are they adding to the commercial load? Is that what's slowing it down? Because it just occurs to me, they want more people to watch the game, so they have all these rules to speed it up. And then when it gets to where people who don't usually watch are watching, it's excruciatingly slow.
Well, I think in the playoffs, Steve, and it's a good question, there are too many pitching changes. These managers try and, you know, get cute and fancy. The Dodgers use 6 pitchers in game one. Game two, the Cubs use 5. The Dodgers use 5. But more than that, I talked about this with Bill Melton, the former Sox All-Star third baseman. He pointed out that since like 1977, if you go 10 years, you go from 77 to 87 to 97 to 07 to 17, the amount of pitches per at-bat have almost doubled in that time span. Now, pitchers are throwing more balls, and hitters are taking more pitches. So, you know, the average at-bat now, I want to say there's like 7 or 8 pitches per at-bat.
Really?
40 years ago, the average at-bat was 4 or 5 pitches.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's the combination of a lot of things. There are more pitching changes. Pitchers aren't throwing as many strikes. And now these offenses, all the mindset is now in the playoffs, offenses want to grind at bats so they can get pitchers out of the game earlier. They don't want starters to go 7, 8, 9 innings.
Well,
would you believe the last starting pitcher to throw a complete game in an LCS? 2005, when the Sox did it 4 times in a row. Guys don't go deep
anymore.
There are so many pitching changes now. So many of them.
Well, if that's it, and that makes a lot of sense, I it's hard to argue against that because they're playing the game. You know, I get why that's part of the game. So I have to live with that.
I don't think you do. Well, I mean,
what do you want to do, make the strike zone bigger?
No, I don't think you can change it, but I don't think – I mean, for instance, has all of this manipulation of the pitching staff helped the Cubs? I think there have been at least 2 instances where if they would have just left the pitcher in, we would have been fine. The game would have moved on a little more quickly.
Well, but what Sam's saying, too, and I think it was last night, Sam, where they talked about how the Dodgers were taking so many pitches.
Oh, yeah.
Because they wanted to increase the pitch count on Lester to get him out of the game earlier. So that slows the game down,
that's the game,
but
yeah.
But they're playing the game.
Oh, yeah, that I haven't had a problem with. By the way, my estimated probability of accuracy of the following interesting factoid is 64%. Which is high. Frank Thomas, when he was playing, led the majors in pitches per at bat. Our very own Frank Thomas.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
And I think it was 4.1, to Sam's point, that they take a lot more pitches now or are seeing a lot more pitches for whatever reason. But I think it was under 5, and I think it was Frank Thomas, and I'm pretty sure I'm right about that.
Elif!
Elif, how many pitches did Frank Thomas take per at bat?
Elif doesn't even need to look up sports questions. She
I know,
knows
she's
them
not
all.
Good. She'll poor Elif. Elif, how many pitches per at bat did Frank Thomas see in his career? No, this isn't a question for you to answer. It's a question for you to look up. I don't know that you'll know.
Elif?
I may not be good at this one thing, okay?
No, that's okay. I think I don't know how obscure it is or how you'll find it, but how many pitches per at bat did Frank Thomas see in his career? I'm going to say it's under 5, and that the number's a lot higher now. All right. Sam, I need to ask you a football question, and that is, did you pick games over the weekend? Are you still in that thing?
Yeah, it's a season-wide contest. I went 4-1, man. 4-1, finally. I got some good luck on my side. So we're back in the top 9%. Current standings, we are 246th. We're right there. A 5-0 week this week, this upcoming week. We'd be in the money, likely. I had the Browns, the Vikings, the Bears, the 49ers, and the Steelers. You cannot, I tell you what, do not let me take the Browns the rest of the year. Don't let me do it.
I'm gonna intervene.
If I do it, you get to kick me. You
okay.
get to kick me somewhere.
Okay. We got some calls. We have some questions from our listeners for you. Sam Panionovich from WGN Sports is on the phone. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Do you got to teach a class, Sam?
No, I'm good. I can hang up.
Okay, stay right there. We'll pick up a couple of phone lines with him. And Elif will have the answer to how many at-bats Frank Thomas saw, how many pitches per at-bat after this. Sam Panionovich from WGN Sports is on the phone. We're just talking a little bit about some of the sports over the weekend, including the Cubs games. And isn't it nice that we all have at least a day of mental rest and physical rest tonight, Sam? There's no at least Cubs baseball. Are the Yankees playing tonight?
Yeah, you got the Yankees and the Astros back in New York. Yankees desperately need a win here. I think I have to correct myself on a stat here. That complete game stat, ESPN said that that was the first one since 2005. But Justin Verlander had a complete game in this round for the Astros. So I just wanted to clarify that. So the last one before 2017 was in 2005, according to ESPN that I just read. So just wanted to correct myself real quick.
Say it, and it was the White Sox, and how many in a row?
Four.
And then four in a row. Games 1, 2, 3, I think 1, 2, 3, and 4.
It's amazing. Amazing. In 1988, players saw, on average in baseball, 3.58 pitches per at-bat. By 2013, it had gone to 3.83, but only 3.83, so I'll bet it's still around four, give or take a little bit, of pitches per at bat. And Frank Thomas, as I recall, for his career, I still haven't found that statistic yet, was over four and was, I think, for his career, the major league leader. I'll get back to you on that. So just give me one quick sort of headline on the Bears. What did we learn about the Bears this weekend?
Oh, John Fox just tried to blow that game, didn't he? I mean, that was something. They had an 11-point lead with 5 minutes left to go, and they still almost lost. So it's all cool when they win a game, but I mean, they should have not had the game be so close. I mean, I can't believe it actually went to overtime. They had to win in overtime, 27-24. I think the run game was really what did it for me. 231 yards on the ground.
Yeah.
Baltimore never gives up that much on the ground. 167 to Jordan Howard, and then Trubisky and Tariq Cohen each had 32. The Bears, if they don't turn it over, they run the ball super well. They'll be in all these games. And really, too, John, their defense is something special. I mean, I think they have a top 10 defense in the NFL. It's crazy to see what the Bears can do when they don't turn it over. Now, Trubisky, he did fumble it. I think he had two fumbles. He fumbled it twice, lost one. Cohen lost one. So they did turn it over twice via the fumble. But when this defense comes to play, man, they're tough to beat.
On line two is a question for Sam. Let me put you on lock and take two. Hi, you're on WGN. Sam, what's your question?
My name is Jim. Sam is the guy that's going to answer the question.
It is.
Hey, Sam, you're like the best sports guy, to say that first. But why is a catcher like Contreras allowed to go out to the mound time after time after time? I thought there was a limit to that.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question, and I appreciate your comment. They're actually, I think you get two an inning, and then after the second one in an inning, you have to make a pitching change. So, well, that's with the manager at least. The manager goes out there twice, and you have to take the pitcher out. I don't have the rule book in front of me. I don't think there actually is a limit on the amount of times a catcher can go out there, which is why I think Wilson Contreras, it's actually pretty frustrating to a lot of other teams. They complain about it quite a bit that he goes out there and disrupts the rhythm of the game. But I don't think there's a limit on the amount of times that a catcher alone can go out there.
I think it would be frustrating to his pitcher. If I'm the pitcher and I see him halfway across the mound there, I just say, look, dude, go back. I know you want me to throw strikes. I know. I'll settle down. Just sit down. I don't want to see you out here. It's bad enough that I'm throwing badly. Leave me alone, for crying out loud. That would be my attitude. All right, Sam, I'll talk to you on our Saturday show. If I don't talk to you sooner, I appreciate your help today, my friend.
You got it. See ya.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
What?
Here's John Williams.
A lovely day. after the rainiest day for some of you, for many of you, for the rainiest day in the history of Chicago on Saturday. Sunday, it sort of decided it had had enough, and now today, Monday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday. You've got beautiful days. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue until 3. Remember, you can always hear me Saturdays when we're not preempted for Northwestern football from 10 a.m. until noon.
You've had it easy lately. I mean, you're only working a five-day work week.
I know. And only 2 hours a day. So I'm getting away with something here. Although I sure do like it when Northwestern. In fact, every now and then I go online and I type in Northwestern football.
Just because, to see what's coming?
Because they haven't put the starting time for all of the games. They weave those in as the season goes along, depending on how the teams are doing. They give them better spots or worse spots. So I really want Northwestern to do well. A, because we like Northwestern. But B, because I think if they do well, then they get the 11 a.m. kickoffs. And then I'm preempted. I've already looked up the basketball schedule. And there are, sadly, not that many Saturday morning basketball games for the Wildcats this year. I'll have to call them and talk to them about that. When I was on Saturday, I was talking to Domiti Pongo, our newsman, and he did the story about the Lake County Republicans, which had a Second Amendment appreciation dinner and raffle where you could get yourself some food. You could also get yourself some guns. Among the guns they were raffling off were the very gun that was used in the Las Vegas shooting. Somebody, I guess, had donated that gun. And so you...
Well, the very style.
Not the exact right one per se, but an AR-15 semi-automatic assault rifle was one of the guns that was being raffled off. My only point about that, I mean, I think I've heard of these things before. I've never really understood it, but here's what I put on Facebook about that. I said, they did it. They really did it. Semi-automatic weapons and AR-15s. If you are a Lake County Republican, you may well support gun ownership as we now know it. But do you think this raffle at this time was a good idea? I'll share your comments Monday. So here we are Monday, and I'm ready to share some of your comments. You can call my number, too, 312-981-7200, or text to that line. Why would it have been so difficult for you to not raffle off the AR-15 this time? I know it's the Second Amendment. I mean, you're there because you support gun ownership, so I don't suppose a mass shooting is going to change your views about that. But just the timing, is it too much? And maybe it is. This sounds rhetorical. I don't mean it that way. Is it too much to ask for a little sensitivity to the other side, to the sort of shock that the country is still dealing with that terrible shooting in Las Vegas where the guy had a, you know, tricked out AR-15, among other things? Would it be too much to just say, the timing on this looks bad? Let's, hey, Bob, hey, Steve, hey, Earl, if we're going to do the thing, let's do hunting guns. I don't know, let's not do the AR-15. Give the AR-15 back. And the chairman of the Lake County Republicans said, well, but that would be inconsiderate to the guy that donated it. We didn't want to tell him no thank you. I was flabbergasted by that line. Yeah, you do. Yes, you do. You say no thank you. You say, hey, you're a Second Amendment guy. We're a Second Amendment guy. And nothing's going to change that. But you know what? It's not good for us right now. Put it this way. If you're a Lake County Republican and you want to get people to be Republicans and maybe donate and support small government and things that Republicans are for, frankly, that all of us are for, does this help you? Does this help you? I mean, like maybe you'll make a few thousand dollars on the gun raffle. But in the meantime, you're giving the home team a bad name. I would have foregone the few thousand dollars in the name of PR. Because trust me, the people who would have been disappointed in you, hey, I thought we were Republicans here, I thought we were, you know, gun rights advocates, they're still going to be Republicans. What are they going to do? Vote for Hillary? No. You're not going to lose anything. But you might gain something. You might sleep well at night, too. Your messages on my Facebook page included this. Marlene said, WTF is wrong with these people's brains, with their hearts, with their souls. But David said, guns don't kill people. Crazy people pointing them at people and pulling the triggers do. Jeanette said, nobody in Lake County needs an assault rifle except the military and the police. Nancy said, really? I mean, really? Gail said, who the hell needs this? No one. It's testosterone driven, she said. David said the idiots who just have to have an AR is their only statement about themselves. This represents them as they have nothing else. But Pam said, get a grip, folks. American legions all around Chicago area hold gun raffles all the time. I can think of two within the past 2 months. I've heard of these before, Pam, and I appreciate you saying that. I think if nothing else, you've got to give me this, right? The timing is bad. It looks like you're thumbing your nose at this incident, this shooting. Would you agree with me on that? Call me now. I'm anxious to hear what you have to say. Or text 312-981-7200. I guess I'm really not a Republican, and because I just so don't understand this. Put it this way. If you are or were or wanted to be, is being a Republican so aligned with gun ownership that you don't see a problem with this raffle they had, the dinner and gun raffle in Lake County on Friday night? And the timing is what just bothers me the most. But really, I'll bet there are plenty of people out there who are Republicans who are not big gun people, right? But you support the things that Republicanism is all about, like smaller government, or maybe it's a, you know, human life issue or some other immigration issue. I mean, there's a lot of things that define maybe being a Republican. I always think first and foremost it's economic, or at least in my mind it should be. But does gun ownership as an issue so largely define Republicans that they feel safe in saying, hey, everybody, look, here's our annual dinner and gun raffle. And then there's the pictures of all of these handguns and long guns. And then the, you know, the creme de la creme here, this AR-15. Ooh, you get to have an AR-15. And if you're trying to raise awareness and money, but really support for your party up there in Lake County, is that a slam dunk? Is that such a sure thing? Boy, if we just put guns there, they'll just come running. Or is it possible that they'll come to our party for a lot of reasons? This actually might scare them off. This might work against us. And that would be my advice to them. I don't know why people don't come to me for more advice, Steve. You would think they would come to me for advice. You'd think they would say, John, you talk on the radio. What do you think we should do? It just doesn't seem to happen that often. But I would say, well, we want to get as many people in the Republican Party up here in Lake County as we can. And by the way, we've got plenty, but we'd like even more. Lord, we don't want them to go be Democrats. So what can we do to sort of broaden our base or get more money? And a gun raffle, I think, is penny wise and pound foolish. You say, all right, well, we could sure get some people to do that, boy. But I guarantee you there are people who define themselves as Republicans and do not consider themselves all about the guns, do not support the idea that you would raffle off an AR-15. So then you, as the Lake County Republicans, have to ask yourselves, okay, is this in our best interest? But what it really just seems is, you know what it is? Screw you. That's what it is. It's like, I don't care what you think. And I don't care that the timing on this is perfectly wrong. I'm going to do it anyway. And you can't tell. And of course we can't. You get to do whatever you want. I'm just saying I don't think this is in your best interest. And if I'm missing something there, then I must not be eligible for the Republican Party, because I just don't see that. Would you almost want to walk away if you saw that? You go, oh, that's what, you guys, listen, I don't think I can be on this bus anymore. Okay, we'll pick up a couple of phone lines. You can text to 312-981-7200 as well. We'll start with John on line two. Jump in there, John. What did you want to say? Hi.
What's going on, John? Years ago, I think when you were on, it was right after the Virginia Tech thing. First of all, this whole gun thing is in bad taste, all right, this whole raffle, whatever. But I remember you guys had somebody on, or you might have said yourself, that he stopped Joy at Virginia Tech. If he walks in front of all those kids and he has basically a handgun, and I mean no gun in his hand, just his fingers, and goes boom, no one gets killed, all right? So without the gun, no one gets hurt, all right? I mean, I have a couple long guns at home I haven't shot for years, all right? I was a hunter. But as I get older, I just see that this whole gun thing is crazy. They go after this whole Second Amendment thing and the militia and all this stuff. Back when that rule was put in, it would take you 20 minutes to load a long gun with black powder and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and now they got guns that can shoot you a person a second. And it's a slippery slope. I get it, but it's ridiculous already. I think there has to be way more gun control. And then just throwing this in people's face about this raffle is like, how stupid. I just don't get it anymore. I mean, but then look who's in the White House.
I know that, but that's sort of my point today is that I know that a lot of us are always going to be divided about guns one way or another. But even if I was on the committee for guns, I would say, guys, this is a bad idea today. Let's have the gun raffle next year, but not this year.
But they won't do that. They won't do that because these are the same people who are supporting Yahoo no matter what he does. I mean, he does crazy stuff and says things that are so outlandish that someone's just – the next Congress meeting, next Senate comes, someone should get up and just say, we've got to start impeachment proceedings right now because it's getting so bad. I mean, there's the average people on the street who just go to work every day who are scared to death because they don't know what he's going to do next. I mean, between North Korea, and this thing with Iran now, and then you take the gun into it, it's a crazy time. I'm just telling you, we don't even wear guns. I know that for sure.
I appreciate you listening, John. Thanks for calling.
Take it easy.
Trump's not going anywhere. Fred, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Good afternoon, John. I'm curious. When you go to purchase a gun, there's a waiting period, and you need an FOI card. What are these people doing at these raffles? Does the winner have an FOI card, and does he have to wait before he gets that gun?
A FOI card? Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-mm.
I don't know how you're able to walk away with it if they haven't looked. Maybe they've already sort of pre-checked themselves in and have demonstrated. I don't know. Somebody will call in and answer that question for us. It's a good one, Fred. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, you think that the people that are going to win it at least can lawfully own it. Hey, Cheryl, this is John. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, John. I think our priorities as a country are just a little out of whack. I have to show my driver's license to buy cough medicine for my child. But yet the Vegas shooter was able to amass an arsenal of, 60 weapons? Like, there has to be some national database that if you type in his name and you see he's already got 6 or 8 or 10 guns, I'm sorry, you can't buy anymore. And then the problem is he's going to go to a street corner because he had so much money. Money talks. He could go get a gun wherever. So we've got to figure out a way to figure this out. Because, I mean, a driver's license for cough medicine, but you can have guns that shoot 100 bullets a second. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I appreciate your call. Remember Colin Juice 2 Saturdays ago said on Weekend Update, he said, if I spend more than $100 on Chick-fil-A, I get an alert from my bank saying, hey, Colin, we hope this is fraud. You're not really spending $100 on Chick-fil-A, are you? Why, if banks can monitor your spending on Chick-fil-A, how come we can't have some sort of national monitoring of your gun purchases? I know that Chick-fil-A isn't so important that it's sort of enshrined in the Bill of Rights and the Second Amendment is, but I think that's a not only funny point, but also a pretty good one. We go from there to, is it Michelle on line one? Hi, you're on WGN. This is John.
Hi, John. The only comment and question I had is if the tickets were pre-sold for the raffle, people may have purchased it for the opportunity to win the AR-15. And then they had the question of whether we should pull it or not. Then they could have, requested money back for those raffle tickets.
Right. Yeah, that's probably more complicated than I'm making it sound. But you've already sold those raffle tickets there, mixed in with some other tickets. Now, how do we... I don't know how they were going to manage all of that.
Right.
Maybe there's something to that. I still would have liked it. I still don't get the feeling they worked real hard on backing out of the AR-15. But yeah, I probably don't have enough information on that. I appreciate the call, Michelle.
You're welcome.
Have a good day. And from you, we go to Susan. Hey, Susan, this is John.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. Talk to me. You're on the air.
Okay, couple things. First of all, I'm a Democrat. And I agree with gun raffles. I have no issue with them.
Okay, good.
So we'll start off with that. And the way a gun raffle works, I have run several of them, is guns are normally distributed through a gun dealer, not through the people holding the raffle. You collect the money through the raffle, and you pay the gun dealer for the guns. The raffle people do. The person who wins will then go to the gun dealer, which is usually one of the reputable gun shops in their community,
right,
who will then do all the legal paperwork. and only a legal gun owner will be able or holder will be able to purchase that gun.
So if I win the raffle, they don't hand me the AR-15 on my way out the door?
No, absolutely not. You will be going to the gun shop and doing all the right paperwork and waiting the waiting period, showing your FOID card, being processed like you're supposed to be.
What do you make of the timing of this?
Well, I think that they probably were working on this gun raffle well before.
Yeah.
The timing of this was an issue.
I know that.
Because normally it takes 6 to 8 months to really sell, you know, gun raffle tickets to make money on it.
Yeah, sure. So, and then that terrible shooting happened. So what do you think they should have done about that?
It's devastating. I mean, realistically, what do you do when you're a nonprofit and you've sold 400 or 500 tickets and all of a sudden this happens? I mean, you know, how do you call every single person and tell them we're no longer doing the gun raffle that you've paid for?
Well, the difference maybe is this wasn't a nonprofit. It was a political party, too.
Well, I understand that. That's, you know, now they're classed as nonprofits, political parties are, believe it or not.
I know, but it just the you know. They would be a little more sensitive to it, too, I think.
I agree with you. I think they don't see the downside.
A lot of work to get there.
They don't see the downside in it. You're right. The whole idea of a gun raffle makes some of us queasy, but some of us, including you, a Democrat, support it. So I'm that's not my quibble. My only problem here is the timing, that somebody said, wow, this is going to be a lot of work. Hey, there goes your weekend, but we're going to have to call all of these people.
And I don't have an issue with that. I mean, you should make the calls if that's the case. But at the same time, an AR-15 is different than an AR-16. Just because it's AR, I mean, there's semi-automatic and there's automatic. Automatics are much different than semi-automatics, significantly different. They don't just, you know, rapidly shoot. So, I mean, there has to be, you know, someone needs to really understand what they're looking at in order to make those judgments.
Yeah.
Granted, I'm not going to take an AR-15 and go deer hunting. That's more for target practice. But still, I mean, there are really, you know, high-powered deer guns that can take out a buffalo.
I really appreciate you listening and calling, and you've got an interesting perspective on this. Thanks for helping us out.
Sure.
Have a good day. You betcha. In our studio right now is Reagan Brewer. She's the vice president at the Jane Addams Resource Corporation. We've been telling you the story of the Jane Addams Resource Corporation for the last couple of Mondays, and here we go again. Although, Reagan, this is the first time you and I have met. Welcome to the studio.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
What does JARC, what does J-A-R-C do?
Sure. Jane Addams Resource Corporation, or as you mentioned, JARC, we provide job training that is free for the job seeker in the manufacturing sector, so primarily machine operator and welding positions, and then we help folks get placed into those jobs.
When I see people doing some of those jobs, I think, how did they learn how to do all of that, either operate the machine or repair those machines or drive those tractors or whatever it is that they're doing? This is kind of where you guys come in.
That's absolutely where we come in. So we work with people that have no background in this. So we are pretty much just looking for people that are eager to work in the manufacturing sector, that are going to be reliable and have a good attitude and show up every day to work on time. So other than that, we can train you on all the skills that you'll need. You just have to be, you know, open and willing and have a drive to have a career in manufacturing.
Yeah, no kidding. It's funny that, you know, once upon a time, I think we had to help people with high-tech jobs, and maybe there's still the need for that. But we're sort of leaving the low-tech is the right word, these sort of blue-collar sort of jobs behind. And yet there is still the need for those positions.
Absolutely, and the need is not going to go away. It really is what we consider to be middle-skilled positions. So they're not necessarily the lower-skilled entry-level positions that we're looking to get people into. It's really those middle-skilled positions that offer a career pathway where you can move up and advance into different types of jobs.
So does anybody qualify for the program? Because you don't charge for the program, right?
No, it's free. So we're targeting job seekers, so unemployed or underemployed folks over the age of 18 and authorized to work in the U.S. Those are the minimum requirements. Other than that, as I mentioned, we're looking for people that have a desire to work in manufacturing, good attitude.
Seriously, but if I was a checker at a store or worked at a restaurant and I thought, I can see the ceiling on this place or I don't want to do this anymore, that would be a good candidate.
That's absolutely the type of people that we work with. People that have worked in maybe fast food, retail, real jobs that aren't going to offer them family-sustaining wages and benefits. Those are the types of folks that come into our program and do really well.
And one other point that I want to visit with one of your success stories, but you told me off the air that not only do you train them for those positions per se, but a person that now finds themselves in the work world is now having to manage money, finances, borrow, pay off bills, etc. You actually do some counseling along those lines.
Absolutely. So we believe it's not enough for someone to just get a job, but they have to be able to manage their finances and build towards their financial future. And so we offer free financial education as well as one-on-one financial coaching for as long as someone needs it. So it could be a variety of issues that an individual would want to work on, you know, from student loan debt, credit building, asset development in terms of, you know, purchasing a car or a home. We'll work with folks on all of those issues.
Hmm. One of the graduates of your program is Lisa Urbina, and she's on the phone. Hey, Lisa, this is John. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. You know Reagan, right?
Yes, I know Reagan.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Reagan.
What do you do? What is the job that... So you went through the program. What do you do now?
Well, I went through the program a few years back, and I did the CNC part of it, which is computer numeric control. I had a background in manufacturing already, but it's always good to brush up your skills. So when I found JARC, that was my goal, to learn something different within the manufacturing industry and then just run with it. I'm currently a maintenance technician. I've been employed at this position, this company, for 5 years. So what I learned at JARC, you know, it helped me out a lot. You know, I always strive to have a better career. So I'm always learning something new and implementing that as well in my life.
No kidding. Are there many women in that position?
Honestly, there's more and more. You see more nowadays than there were 10 years ago. I've actually been in the manufacturing industry for about 20 years, and in the beginning there weren't. So it's good to see women actually try it out and like it.
Yeah, no kidding. And then, you know, we were just talking about sort of the financial counseling. While you got training, do you use any other services from JARC as well?
I actually use everything they offered, from resume writing to interview, you know, practicing how to conduct an interview, and then also to be the interviewed person. And then I did the financing part as well, which helped me learn a lot about managing money and raising your credit score. So that's what I've been working on.
Did you have a distressed credit score beforehand?
I did. And in the beginning, it was tough because when you don't have credit, so you try to build it up. So I had a few bumps in that road, and I'm actually proud to say I'm purchasing a home. Hopefully by the end of this month, I'll close. So it does help.
Well, how about that, Reagan? Yeah. That's a success story.
It's fabulous. Lisa has been just amazing. She's one of you know, the people that really stand out to me. She's been a leader. She's given back to JARC in so many ways, and she's really taken full advantage of everything that we offer, which is really kind of what helps people be successful. If they take advantage of the full range of services that we provide, they can get to a point in their career that Lisa is at, where she has... she's been a supervisor. She's in a role where not a lot of women have held those types of positions, and now she's purchasing a home, which is really fantastic.
I wonder what the limit is for you. Like, have you been getting raises along the way? Is this a better career path for you?
Definitely. I've been getting nothing but raises, you know, and it's not, you know, you can't expect to get raises. You have to work hard for it. And so, you know, with the skills that you learn, you get confident. That's my thing. You know, I share it with my children. Even I have a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old and an 11-year-old as well. But and they see me work hard, and it reflects the personality that I have and the drive that I have to do better. It rubs off on your kids, and it's really good. It's a good feeling.
Mm. Well, you know, you're more than just a... I'll close with this, Lisa. I've only known you for a minute now. We talked about you off the air, but, I mean, everybody wants a good employee, but you're more than that. I think you sound like a great role for your kids and for anybody else who thought, oh, my life is tough right now, what am I going to do? Well, look at what Lisa did.
Yeah, it's great. I'm just proud for the opportunity, and I'm happy.
Yeah. Lisa Urbina, well, congratulations. Are you working today? Where are you on your work schedule right now?
I'm actually at work now. I work for Warner Corporation out of Crystal Lake, Illinois. And it's a great company. So it's out there, guys. Just go for it.
No, there's the best endorsement we've heard. Lisa, I'll let you get back to work. I don't want you to get in trouble over there, okay?
Okay.
Bye now. It's a 240. So, well, good for you guys.
Well, thank you.
Isn't it nice to know there is such a thing?
Yeah. I mean, Lisa's great. She's very, you know, representative of a lot of our folks. We're proud of them all. I'm, you know, happy that she was able to represent because she's been a huge success story over the years. So
while you and I were talking, Vicki, is it Nygren or Nygren just walked in?
Nygren.
Hi, Vicki. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
I understand you are the agency manager for the Chicago North area of Country Financial. Is that right?
That is correct.
So what do you do? What's your job?
I hire and train all the salespeople in the city of Chicago.
I see.
I help them with providing financial security to individuals and business owners in the market.
Now, well, Country Financial has been part of these conversations because you guys help fund what JARC does, right?
We do. We've worked with JARC many years. We provide grants throughout the years to help them with some of their programming.
Yeah. Do you guys use tax dollars too? Or where do you get your money? Do you have fundraisers? What do you do?
It's a variety. So about a little over half of our funding comes through grants from the government, a variety of different sources. We also work with partners like Country Financial, foundation partners, philanthropic partners that make up about 30% of our funding. And then we also go out and we work in companies. So we provide training to the workers, typically the frontline production workers, and companies will pay us for that. So
I was just going to say, if you're doing the training, they ought to pay you because you're getting you're screening and training a viable workforce, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I know you've still got expenses, and Vicki said, okay, I want to jump in here. So Vicki, what do you want to do?
Well, Regan, I'm here today, and I'm very excited because we're here to present you with a $10,000 check.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Yeah. We want to continue to provide the support and the financial resources to help you with the great mission and help you do the things that you've
Holy
been working
cow.
With.
Holy cow. Vicki, you're amazing.
Yeah. Well, Country Financial, I mean, they're the ones bringing it to the table, but we know the great work you do.
I would be hugging you if there wasn't this microphone in my face. Yeah. That's amazing.
You're blushing. Yeah. You are
all
flush. Oh,
my God, I know. I'm sorry. Thank you so much.
Well, again, great organization. We've enjoyed working with you throughout the years. Oh. I know a lot of my financial reps have come in and helped with some of the financial literacy.
They've been great, yeah.
And we're excited to be part of it and continue to be part of other organizations that we can provide support to.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really flattering.
Stuff like this doesn't happen by accident, you know. I think we all need to do our part, and that includes companies like yours saying, okay, let's all be part of this project, this community.
Yeah, it's exciting. We're happy to be here in the community, and we're also happy to provide financial security to both individuals, business owners, and also nonprofits like yourself.
Well, thank you so much. That's really exciting. Okay. You just totally made my day.
$10,000 will do that. Country Financial, thank you. Vicki, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And, keep doing the good work. Let's visit
again.
Thank
you. Yeah, absolutely.
The next time you come on, I might not have a check for you, but
that's okay.
It was fun to watch this happen. It's your known sequitur of the day. Hey, hey. Come on, it's time to
play. Non sequitur. Wendy thinks those people should be imprisoned.
Wendy thinks those people should be in prison. That's today is non sequitur. So that was something said here on WGN Radio earlier today. And if you can tell us what Bill and Wendy were talking about, who should be in prison, then you win our fabulous prize today, a Lou Malnati's pizza. It's your non sequitur of the day. Hey, hey. Come on, it's time to play. Non sequitur. Here comes.
Wendy thinks those people should be in prison.
Who should be in prison, Bill? Who does Wendy think should be in prison? You were listening to Bill and Wendy earlier today. Call 312-981-7200. First person with the right answer will win the Lou Malnati's Pizza Prize. Who should be in? You know what? I was listening to this, and now I don't even remember the answer. So, Elif, make sure I have the right answer here. Is that what it is? Is line one the correct answer? The bit doesn't work if the host doesn't know the answer. Okay, the host has been told the answer. And that's Paula. Hey, Paula, it's John. How are you?
I'm doing good.
You were listening to Bill and Wendy earlier today?
I was.
As we all should, by the way. I love their show. They're very funny and very clever and very smart. And Wendy said some people should be thrown in prison. Who needs to go to jail?
People who don't pronounce their words the right way.
I believe it was the word jewelry. Was that the one that really set her off?
That's the one.
Okay, now I'm apprehensive about this. Jewelry. Is that correct?
It's jewelry. Yeah, and she doesn't like people who say jewelry.
Oh, I see. Throwing it, because you do spell it J-E-W-E-L, right? Jewelry.
Right.
It's sort of like realtor, or what's another one where we don't know? You know, we get this, either there's too few or too many syllables.
Comfortable.
Comfortable was one? Oh, yeah, comfortable. Yeah, right. Yeah, some people say that. Well, boy, that's tough. If you get it wrong, Wendy's sending you to jail. But at least you're going to Lou Malnati's Pizza on Us. So thanks for the call. Thanks for playing the non sequitur of the day.
Thank you so much.
That was your non sequitur of the day. For all the winners, I say hooray. Non sequitur.
By the way, shout out here to Marlene Wells, who today, I believe, is today Marlene's anniversary at WGN, or is it sometime this week? Violetta, you were upstairs today. Is it today is the day, right?
I believe today's the day, 50 years.
Marlene has worked at this radio station 50 years. You may know the names of some people who are behind the scenes at this radio station, like Todd Manley. Actually, he's our boss. I don't know if that's behind the scenes. Or Maureen McDonald, people that, you know, seem to be helping us out in a number of capacities, at a number of events and venues, or participating in things. But Marlene is at all of our stuff. She organizes them. She puts them on. When we do Thomas Jefferson in December and Meriwether Lewis in Elgin's Community College at the Blizzard Theater there, Marlene will be there with her fine husband, Rick. What a great guy he is. Marlene has been doing that for 50 years at this radio station today. So they had a hoo-ha for her upstairs, a big surprise hoo-ha. And the food was fabulous. I was talking to somebody about that, Violetta. I did not know that was your family's restaurant.
Yeah, my family brought in the food.
Hokey smokes, that chicken salad on apple wedge was to die.
Thank you.
That's exactly how I love that, with the...
And some walnuts, candied walnuts and grapes.
Yeah, but what was this?
Chicken.
Was it, and pulled chicken, and there was like oregano or I don't know what the spice or seasoning was.
You're getting
was
a little too
there.
Specific for me.
It
on
was
the,
really
on the mixtures
good. What's
there?
The name of your family's restaurant?
Little Bucharest. It was
little
a tea
Bucharest.
Party, so
oh,
we had all
wow.
bite-sized food. It was perfect for
me. I get it now. Oh, man, was them some good groceries. Whoo!
Thanks. I'll pass it along. My mom worked hard on it.
It was because a lot of times we have pizza or a salad or, you know, some sandwiches from Jimmy John's. And those are all fine. But this was like delicious little finger food that looked gorgeous.
The deviled eggs went like crazy.
I'll bet they did. And then you had, what were those little white bread sandwiches? Those little sandwiches with cheese and ham or something?
Yeah,
on it?
Cheese and ham. And then
oh,
we had
man.
Some meatballs. And
yeah. And then it looked like a little chicken things.
Yeah, that was actually their chicken schnitzel. It's breaded chicken
oh, yeah.
with some Swiss cheese and roasted red peppers.
I want some of that. Little Bucharest, huh?
Little Bucharest. Alston and Addison.
Marlene, thank you, and I hope that you continue to serve this fine radio station for another 50 years, Rokan. Marlene today.
I know. 50. Can you believe that?
Yes, actually. Marlene, so, you know, do the math, right? We didn't hire her when she was three. We hired her when she was... She is still the most energetic, fit, able person you will ever work with.
It is. It's
Marlene gets it done.
Amazing. Yes.
And by the way, don't get in Marlene's way while she's getting it done.
That is true.
Because when Marlene's,
I learned that the hard way the first day.
Okay, Ro, congratulations. You're going to work at WGN. Here's your studio. Here's what we're going to do. There's this woman named Marlene. She runs the joint, and you're going to have to do her bidding. Or she's going to help you, but you're going to have to play her games.
Well, I figured that she had been here by the time I got here, 47, 48 years.
Yeah.
So I figure that she has pictures and that the bosses are going to do whatever she says. And
she probably does. She probably does.
You know, it's one of those situations where you just, I'm not going to, you know, when you very rarely do you ever encounter that with people that they've been at some place for so long. So I just, you know.
Yes, Marlene.
Whatever you need.
And you're in good hands. What are you doing today?
Brett Baer's going to join us coming up here in just a few minutes. We also have Mike Monaco, this is interesting. The healthcare thing is getting held up by lawsuits. So you've got the question about whether or not
from the attorneys general.
Yes, where is all that going to go? There are no new lawsuits, new states, or attorney generals of states, attorneys general. I learned is
it's
the
attorneys
general. Attorneys general, and Harvey Weinstein
is going to join you on the show.
Yeah, no, he's getting sued. So we'll have some thoughts on that. And OB will be here to talk about the Bears. I have never in my entire life of being a Bears fan, John.
Yeah,
I have never. I've never been madder at Bears wins in my life than I am right now.
This is what Sam was saying. I didn't watch the game closely. I turned it off. I fell asleep. It was overtime. We won the game. I thought, thumbs up. Everybody's ticked at the win.
Yeah. I just can't. Even winning makes me mad. I don't know what to do about it. So we'll talk about all of that. That's all coming your way.